Okay, as the last people are coming in, come in, come in. It's good fun. It's the last session of today, last session of Tech Days 2014. So thanks a lot for sticking around. I know that I'm standing between you and going back home. So I hope I can make this session as interesting for you as I find it to troubleshoot production issues. My name is Jelle Druijts. I'm a Premier Field Engineer for Microsoft Belgium, which means that I help customers troubleshoot problems on the Microsoft platform and be good at what they're doing on .NET development, Team Foundation Server, stuff like that. So I'm all day, every day at customers, working with them to make sure that they're not ending up in trouble or having issues or anything like that. So in that capacity, one of the things that I also do is to help them troubleshoot if they're running into any kind of issue. So that is indeed the topic for today, that is troubleshooting production issues with IntelliTrace. So it is a relatively unknown territory for a lot of people, and I think it's a bit of an undervalued technology, but hopefully after this session you'll understand what it can do, how easy it is to use if you know how to get started, and then hopefully make it easier for you guys to solve or at least identify production issues and know how you can go about and solving them. So let's look at today a short introduction to IntelliTrace as a concept, as the tool or the thing that you can do to troubleshoot. But I also want to take some time to go deep enough so that you really understand what a collection plan is and how you can tweak it to make sure that you're capturing the most valuable information out of your running .NET processes. So we'll take a look at the collection plan definition that sort of drives IntelliTrace. And then we'll take a look at the different options and practically hands-on with some demos on how you can do that in production scenarios where you want to troubleshoot an application that's gone haywire. After we gather those trace files from IntelliTrace, obviously we need to have some way of processing them or debugging after the fact, and that's what we'll do in Visual Studio. And then finally, we'll take a big look at the extensibility points in IntelliTrace and what the things are that you can do to get the most out of it. So let's go beyond the basics. This is not really the introduction top level, what is IntelliTrace? That's only like the first 5-10 minutes. But then hopefully we'll get deep enough so that everybody can go home, get hands-on, and really get some stuff done in IntelliTrace. So the first introduction is always sort of this scenario where you have some developer writing some code. He puts the application into a test environment. There's a tester that goes and does all sorts of nasty things with your application, and out comes a bug. So the tester basically sends you a bug report. Hopefully that's just a bit more than a screenshot that has this yellow screen of death or something. If you're very lucky, your tester will give you more information. But typically that's not enough to try and solve the problem that is underlying that problem that they're sending in. So developer takes the bug report, tries to reproduce whatever the tester was doing, but he can't really reproduce it. It's working on his machine, and he's basically going to close the bug, being no repro, can't repro this, no fix is possible. And then the bug will live on forever and ever and ever, and the tester will be really frustrated because he's not getting valued for his work. So that's the sort of scenario that we're trying to avoid with IntelliTrace. We're trying to avoid the no repro bug scenario. So what is IntelliTrace and how is it going to solve that problem? Basically, IntelliTrace is a lifesaver for those hard-to-find bugs because it can record everything that is going on within your process. It is, in that sense, an application recorder. It's been built into Visual Studio 2010 and beyond, but it's now also part of other products that we'll see. So what you can do with that is have it record everything that's going on in the process, not only the execution flow of all the methods being called, but also of the data transferring through those methods, which can be really important because sometimes it's not really enough to know, for example, a call stack and know where it came from or what sort of path it's been following through the code. But it can also be really important to understand the data passing through those method calls because sometimes a bug just occurs because the tester was smart enough to try and put in a negative integer value or something or actually pass in some HTML code in a text box that you as a developer didn't think of doing, right? So the data getting passed through can be equally important as the method call flow that is part of your execution trace. So these things are really important, and that is something that IntelliTrace can allow you to capture. And then after the fact, you can use that trace file that contains all these historical steps, and you can then go ahead and debug in Visual Studio that process as if it were still alive. obviously that is on a different machine. It can be on a different network, a different runtime. There can be the process itself that crashed can already be dead and gone and long gone, but you're still trying to debug that exact process as if it were still alive. So it's really a historical debugger in the sense that you can go back in time, you can go forward in time, you can sort of step through the execution history without that process still being alive. So that's really, really, to me, really cool. It also allows you to turn up the dial, meaning that you can start with a low monitoring level and basically record only some very very simple events or some basic things that you want to capture. But if that's not enough to find out what the real problem is, you can also turn up the dial and make it capture more information. Obviously, turning up the dial will impact your performance of your runtime application, and it will impact the log size of the file that you're capturing. So you need to have a good balance between capturing enough to find a problem and not capturing too much that you're impacting your production usage and or you're just basically exploding the IntelliTrace the traced file size. So that is, for me, one of the goals of this session is to make sure that you have the right information, that you have the right tools to understand how you make that balance and how you can choose in your collection plan what those turns and knobs and dials are, right? So as a technical understanding of how this thing works, basically you start your application either from within Visual Studio or from within your production scenario. So the session today will cover mostly the production issue type of workflow where the application is already started, for example, but you can also just enable this by starting the application from within Visual Studio. And then when it launches, so in this case, it's, for example, a web application, can be any sort of application. So when it launches, at the same time, an IntelliTrace recorder will also start up. And this is the thing that will hook up into the common language runtime in .NET as a profiler API, so it's the magic going on behind the covers. That will start up in the background, and that will attach itself to the process. And once it starts, it will read this thing called the collection plan, which is a big XML file that contains all the data that the recorder needs to know what sort of thing it needs to capture. So upon startup, the IntelliTrace recorder pulls in that XML file, reads everything in it, and determines what to do. And then as the application is being worked with, so as users are working with your web application, for example, IntelliTrace will populate this IntelliTrace file and iTrace file with all the information that you want to have captured defined in the collection plan. After the fact, when you have your IntelliTrace file and you want to inspect it, you can upload that to your development machine and open it in Visual Studio where you can go ahead and do that historical debugging. So we'll look at how that works as well. So first off, important question that I usually get is what are the sorts of applications that you can trace, because this sounds really magical, but it's obviously limited in this case to .NET applications. That is because it's using the Profiler API, which is only available for managed .NET common language runtime based applications. So you can trace anything that runs on .NET 2 or above. That's a good part. You cannot use it for managed code, C++, anything that's not running on the .NET runtime. That's something you cannot use it for. If you want to run the standalone collector, which is the thing that you would usually use in a production environment, you also need to have .NET 3.5 installed on the machine. And for IIS applications, you will have to have PowerShell installed as well. Usually that is fairly easy. You either have it already by default or you just need to enable some roles in Windows Server, and then you have the stuff available and that's fine. But again, the application itself can still target .NET 2 if you want. So the entry point to trace this is quite low. The different application types that you can trace is also fairly extensive. You can trace any Windows executable, so an .exe, a desktop application, console application, that's fine. You can also use it to trace Windows Store applications. So these are the WinRT modern applications in Windows 8 and 8.1. But there you only get a subset of the functionality. You can only trace it to events, not the full call stack or call information, for example. And then finally, and most often used, I guess, is the tracing of IIS applications, so websites hosted in IIS. For that, you need to have IIS 7 or above. So again, pretty standard stuff, I would say. There is one additional thing that you can do, which is not the official supported path, so I didn't say it, but you could use some flags in either environment variables or in the registry for a Windows service, for example, if you want to trace something that isn't started by a standard exe or that isn't started in IIS. So for example, if you have a Windows service or some COM plus host application, there's no real startup class or anything that you should usually trigger. So that's not officially supported, but if you put the right environment variables where you say, I want to enable profiling for the common object runtimes, which is the CLR, and I want to use this profiler GUID, which is the GUID for the Visual Studio 2013 IntelliTrace collector, then you're good to go and you point it to the collection plan XML and it works as well. And then you restart the application, it will pick that up and then you get your IntelliTrace file. So that is another option, but it's not on the official list of things you should be doing. But then again, if you have a real problem, then maybe it's better to be able to trace it than to just keep crashing. Okay, so what are the available collectors for IntelliTrace? Meaning, how do you start enabling IntelliTrace for your applications? In dev and test environments, you have Visual Studio, where you can just basically, when you're in your development machine, you just start your application in Visual Studio, and if you have the Ultimate Edition, then you get IntelliTrace right there. If you're using Test Manager, the tool for test automation and for the test professionals, they also have this IntelliTrace capability built in. So those are the typical client tools that you will see in development and test environments. Now, obviously, again, this session will cover more of the production scenarios. So there we have a couple of options. And if you're on-premise, your own server, your own hardware, then you have two options. That is namely the standalone collector. That's basically a CAP file that you can download or get from your Visual Studio installation directory, and that you extract on your target server, and then you have some PowerShell commands and or a console command line-based application to start IntelliTrace. So we'll take a look at how that works. And the other option, which is newer, has been released, I guess, in September or October, so it's half a year old, is the newly announced or revamped Microsoft Monitoring Agent. And that is an evolution of the System Center agent that you typically use when you're using System Center Operations Manager. But now it packages up more than just operations management, and it also allows you to do IntelliTrace collection. Okay, thanks a lot. So if you're using a Microsoft Monitoring Agent, you can use it with System Center directly, or you can use it also in standalone mode. The good thing is you don't have to connect it to System Center. Obviously, if you do have System Center, then this ties in very nicely with the whole operations and the support story in that tool suite. But even then, you can still run it standalone if you use another vendor or you don't do any monitoring at all. Then you can still install that tool and run it standalone. With that, you get some additional options that you should be that are not that easy to accomplish in the standalone collector. So with the monitoring agent, you can basically have it running continuously. So this supports more of the workflow where you want to continuously monitor your web applications, and it will aggregate some of the exceptions going on, and it will take a look at slow performing pages, for example. So out of the box, if you install this thing in monitoring mode, it will have a very low impact on your application, but you can keep running it in production, and it can surface things like all the pages that take more than 5 seconds to run. So that's pretty nice, and that is the scenario where they're going more towards. So the Microsoft Monitoring Agent is actually now being favored against the standalone collector. So the standalone collector is more useful, let's say, for going in, taking a trace, and going out again, whereas the monitoring agent is usually more something like you install it and you keep it running. So those are for on-premises servers. If you are using Microsoft Azure for your development needs and for your production sites, then you can also use IntelliTrace from within Azure, because they do support extracting IntelliTrace files directly out of Azure. So that's really nice as well. Sorry? Does it?
The collection, does it also run continuously?
I don't know. So the question is, does the collection run continuously in Azure? And I don't think so. I think you have to enable it for a time span. I don't think they're doing the monitoring agent sort of continuous thing in Azure, but you can request the IntelliTrace logs on demand. So once you do get the IntelliTrace files, how do you open them? Well, as I said, you need to have Visual Studio. And the sort of downside is you need to have the Ultimate Edition. So that's some way of making money for the Visual Studio team. Obviously, it is only in the Ultimate Edition, and I'm hoping, but I've been hoping for two editions now, that they would downgrade it into lower level SKUs, but so far, no luck. So you would need IntelliTrace support. You need Ultimate to get the IntelliTrace debugging capabilities. So just as a teaser or pointer, if you are using System Center Operations Manager, then it connects to the agent. And from one central management console, the operations team can just spot issues going on in your production environments. And they can say, well, this sounds like it's not going very well. Let's start the IntelliTrace collection. It also integrates with Team Foundation Server. So if they see something occurring regularly and they want to assign it back to the development team, they can also do that directly from within System Center. So they can say, this sounds like a bit something that you need to investigate. Let's open a new ticket, attach the IntelliTrace file that I collected from production, assign it to a developer team, and they can just directly take a look at the data. And it's not just a screenshot, but they do get the full fidelity information with the iTrace file of everything that was going on at production time. So that's really, really convenient to have that bridge between operations and development. Right. So that's sort of the fluffy marketing speak. So now let's go a bit deeper into the details of the stuff that is actually getting collected at runtime. So this is not everything that you would get when you are running interactively in the debugger in Visual Studio, because obviously, if you're using Visual Studio and you've you're in a breakpoint, then you have full access to the memory at that point in time. And that means that if you step into the next breakpoint, then you have full access to the memory at that point in time, but you can't go back. So IntelliTrace does not capture everything in memory, because then the iTrace file would blow up in 2 milliseconds. So they are trying to strike a balance between capturing just enough that it doesn't blow up the iTrace file, but also not too much so that it would impact performance, or not too little so that you wouldn't get any information out of it. So the things that it does collect, there are a couple of steps where it goes and collects some information and stores it into the iTrace file. So there are a couple of certain fixed events where the IntelliTrace recorder will capture some basic system information. System information being, what are all the DLLs being loaded into memory? What are my threads that are executing? Stuff like that. And that happens when the process starts. That's always a good point. And on any module load or unload event, so that's any time that a DLL comes in or goes out of memory, and any time when there is a thread start or exit. And that basically means that once you've loaded up your iTrace file in Visual Studio in your debugging, then your modules and your threads windows will stay up to date. So your usual debugging tools and windows will just stay up to date based on this information. Then there's this other point where they can trace some information to the file, and that is they're capturing runtime data. And if you're in calls mode, that means that they will capture some data every time you enter or exit a method. This thing is huge. So basically, you can trace your entire execution history and capture information out of that. Obviously, that can make a very big IntelliTrace file, so you have to be a bit careful with this one. And also, if you're in the interactive debugger, so less important here, but if you're in the interactive debugger, at the breakpoint or any time you do a step, they also record some runtime data information. The thing that they are capturing, again, is not the full memory scope of everything that would be in scope in your method, but they are capturing all the parameters to the method, as well as return values for that method, and then they're only capturing the simple data types, so integers, strings, doubles, date times, stuff like that. So,
could you check your output resolution?
I can check my screen.
It's flickering in your frame rate and at advanced setting. It's fine. Okay, you can just continue. He's doing some weird stuff.
So it's gonna go all berserk. Okay. Right. So it's going to collect some data, and the data is going to be all the simple data types that you are able to access. So if a parameter is an integer, then it will get captured. But also if the parameter, for example, is an object that you have defined or is some framework defined object, they won't capture the full object, but they will capture all the simple data types one level down into that object. So again, you won't be able after the fact to drill down into all the properties and recursively into all nested sorts of things, but you will get all the basic data types that are directly visible and then all the basic data types one level deeper. So hopefully, again, that's sort of a trade-off that they had to make. Hopefully that will give you enough information to troubleshoot the actual production problem. So for a collection, indeed, that would be you see that there's a collection, you see how many items are in the collection, and then because that's already your one level of indirection, that would basically stop it right there. In the collection plan, we'll take a look later, you can specify additional events and or go even insaner and plug in your custom DLLs, where you can do whatever you want. So we'll get to more other ways of getting to the information you need, but indeed you are limited in the regular calls mode to only one level down. So far we've had fixed events where some system information is getting captured. Then we have this calls mode where any parameter going in or coming out of a method is being captured, and then we have so-called diagnostic events. So this is something that you define in the collection plan, the part of the XML, where it is very dependent on what you define as that data query or that thing that you want to capture in the XML. So basically, you say, whenever this method gets called, I want to grab this sort of information at runtime out of the memory and put it into the IntelliTrace file. So that isn't limited in any way to a depth of one or multiple objects. That is very, very tuned to exactly capture the details that you want to see in your IntelliTrace file. .NET framework by default comes with, I don't know, a couple dozen or hundreds, I don't know, of these events that they've predefined. For example, if you have a console write line or a debug write line, or if you have an ASP.NET request coming in, or you have a button click in a WPF application, stuff like that is defined as events like this, and they extract all the interesting information that relates to that event, and they put it in the IntelliTrace file. So they are using this mechanism already to surface some quite meaningful events that you will typically want to use. But that's also a very interesting point if you're building a custom framework for your organization that you're reusing across multiple projects, then that's also a very good point where you can define your own diagnostic events in an XML snippet, hand that over to the teams that are using your custom framework, and they can get that exact runtime data that is important to your framework application. So there you have two options. Either you build a data query, which is XML-based, and it's powerful enough, but it's sometimes you want to go even deeper, and that is where you can go through the iProgrammable data query interface, and then you're basically hooking yourself in at runtime, and then you can party on the entire application domain that you're loaded in. So that is fully customizable, but also a bit dangerous. So we'll take a look at all the different steps in the remainder of the session, but now hopefully you'll have the broad picture overview. So first of all, let's dig a little bit deeper into the collection plan. So as I said, that's a big chunky XML file that gets read by the collector when it starts up. It's XML. The premise of XML has always been that it's human readable, but depending on how complex it is, it can be less readable. In this case, it's not too bad. So what I usually do is just take the XML and modify it to my content. But if you do want to have some sort of GUI editor, you can use Visual Studio because it exposes in Visual Studio itself. You can sort of select the events that you find interesting. And there's also a tool on Codeplex that provides a UI on top of that file. But both of these don't really expose all the possible functionality in the collection plan file. So I guess probably for most users that are advanced enough to have to want to do this in production, then it's probably just easier to just open the XML file. So what you can do to get started is not file new XML file and start writing the tags yourself. That would be pretty horrible. But you usually start with the one of the default built-in collection plan XML files. So there is a couple in the IntelliTrace standalone collector that you download or extract from your Visual Studio directory. Or you just take the default one that is used by Visual Studio whenever you run your project in there. So those are stored in some folders that you can use and extract. If you do want to use sort of the editor in Visual Studio to define which events you wanna use, then it's also possible to just start debugging. That file is generated on the fly before the debugger engine starts, and when you stop debugging, the file is automatically deleted. But you can still grab it while the debugger is running from this special directory here. So if you're happy with the settings that you have in Visual Studio and you want to find out how you can translate that into a collection plan, just start debugging, grab the file from within this directory while the debugger is running, copy it over, and stop debugging, and you have the file. It's going to be a file that has a meaningless file name and also a meaningless extension. So if you find something weird in here, that's probably the thing you want. So you start off with some XML file that you find in the wild in Visual Studio or in the standalone collector directory, and then basically it's up to you to modify it to your heart's content. You have a couple of XML elements that you want to look at, and the first is the diagnostic events instrumentation node. And there you have this attribute set that says enabled equals true or false, which is how you enable the events getting collected or not. So remember the events, the IntelliTrace events, is that piece of XML that says, well, if there's a button click, then I want to do this. If this method is getting called, then I want to capture that data. So that is the diagnostic event instrumentation. It's just a simple enable true or false in the collection plan XML, and there you're good to go. The other one, the calls mode, is the one that records all the method calls, entry, and exit events. So that is something that you don't want to enable on a high-load production system, because that will definitely impact your performance. So be a bit careful with that one. But that is called the trace instrumentation element. So there you can also set enable to true or false. And then there's this other thing called the web tracking instrumentation, and that is supposedly used to capture information on an IIS site of the web request coming in and going out. Personally, be a bit careful. I had a case 2 weeks ago with a customer where we enabled this in their website, and instead of having the usual error we were supposed to be seeing because we were troubleshooting an error, we were all of a sudden getting a null reference exception on the system web HTTP runtime process request internal thingy, which is kind of weird. We sort of found out manually by debugging and just trying some stuff out that we could disable this web tracking instrumentation thing, and then luckily we would get our normal expected exception back. So if you ever find this, then turn off web tracking instrumentation and let you go away. So just to give you a quick idea of what that XML file looks like. So this is sort of the default collection plan with some additional diagnostic events that I've added for demo purposes. So it is, let's see, it is 2,814 lines. So it's kind of big. But most of it is really not that important. Startup info, checkpoint options, you can safely ignore that. The interesting part here is the trace instrumentation. So that is the thing that will handle all the method calls, so the call information. And you can also say what it needs to capture. Preset full will just capture all the parameters coming in and going out. So that's a good one. Also note that you can explicitly exclude or include modules, being DLLs, right? So you can say anything that is signed with this public key or that starts with this file name, Microsoft dot, and so the public keys are the well-known public keys that Microsoft uses to sign their assemblies, that will be ignored. Because usually it's safe to assume that the code of the .NET framework itself won't have the bug that you're trying to troubleshoot. And if it does, then basically you don't have the source anyway, so you can't really do much with it. So by default, they are excluding anything that is written by the Microsoft teams themselves. And that means that usually the things that will be included are your code and potentially third-party vendors whose components you've included. So that's something that you can use to already trim down the amount of noise that you get. So let's say, for example, that you have this third-party component vendor and they're generating a whole lot of noise in your iTrace files. It's just a question of putting their public key or assembly name in that exclusion list, and then all the noise is gone. You can potentially also exclude processes. So if you're calling other processes and you want to get rid of that as noise, you can also exclude them in this process list. So that is trace instrumentation. And then we have this diagnostic event instrumentation, again, with the simple enabled is true or false, and then again with a module and a process list. So nothing special going in there, but these are the things that you want to enable or disable depending on your needs. So diagnostic events instrumentation will enable all the diagnostic events that have been configured within the trace point provider element. And this is really the big list. So if I open the diagnostic event specifications, there's a lot of predefined specifications. For example, just taking the first one here, anytime an ODBC command is calling its execute reader method. So that can be very interesting to trace because this is, well, if you're using ODBC, similar events have been defined for a SQL command, et cetera. So if you're calling some database backend, that's probably something interesting to capture because that can explain why something is slow, for example. It can also trace the exact query being executed because that is part of the binding information for that diagnostic specification. And here, basically, you say when this execute reader method is being called, I want to capture these two data queries, and they're going to be the command text and the connection string. So that's really interesting information that you want to surface out of your runtime memory locations. So as I alluded to earlier, this is not restricted to any depth of object hierarchies or number of properties you can go through. I'll go back into a bit more detail, but this is basically a path for against fields in the different objects. So you're starting at the command, and then you go into the connection, the user connection options field, and then the user connection string. So you need to know what the fields are in all the objects that you're trying to trace, but you can see that in reflection tools. And then you can basically extract that runtime information into your IntelliTrace file. So that's the kind of stuff that is defined in a collection plan. So it's not too bad. The only thing that is a little bit tricky is that diagnostic event specification, and I'll go into a bit more detail later on. Okay, so let's say that we have a collection plan and we have a problem. Then we can start capturing in production. So first thing you need to do is choose your engine. So if you're on-premises, as I said, you can either choose the standalone collector or you can use Microsoft Monitoring Agent. So standalone collector is really convenient, and the sysadmin guys really love that because it leaves no trace on the system. You basically remote desktop into the machine, you copy the cap file, which is a sort of a zip file that contains the standalone collector, you extract it, you do your thing, you take it out again, you delete all the files, and then you're off to go. The other option, as I said, is the agent, which is an MSI, so you need to install that. It doesn't require a reboot or anything, so it's still okay, but sysadmins typically aren't very fond of developers installing things on their production systems. So, but again, if it ties in nicely with the monitoring story that they have already with System Center, then this is a big bonus, in fact. So how do you go about this? First of all, you make sure that the software is on the box. So you copy the standalone controller collector, or you install the agent. Then you define your collection plan file. So you tweak the XML to something that you hope or think is good. Then you start your IntelliTrace collection. And then at a certain point in time, hopefully you'll be able to reproduce the bug that you're trying to troubleshoot. And at that point in time, you can either just plain stop IntelliTrace collection and grab your file, or you can also do a checkpoint, which means that IntelliTrace will keep running, but on a new file, so you can grab the old file and start debugging with that. So those are basically the two options you have there, checkpoint or stop. Then you take that IntelliTrace file, you copy it to your development machine, you open it in Visual Studio, hopefully you have the magic solution right out of the box, you see the problem, and you're good to go. Or if you're missing some information, now probably you have more ideas on what additional things you want to trace, You tweak the collection plan XML file, and you go back to start the IntelliTrace. So it can be a bit iterative, depending on if it's something that is highly used in production and you don't want to have too much load or performance impact there. You might want to have a couple of iterations before you really land at the sweet spot where you understand what you want to trace. So for the standalone collector, as I said, that's more of the reactive mode where you're having a problem. You go in, you take the trace data, and you go out again. So you expand the cap file with an expand console command line into some directory. Then either you go into PowerShell for IIS. So there you say import module, the PowerShell module for IntelliTrace. And then you say start IntelliTrace collection with some application pool in IIS. And then either you checkpoint or you stop the IntelliTrace collection with the PowerShell commands. So at that point in time, you're done. The other option is if you have a standalone executable, so an .exe file. So for example, for a desktop application, you copy the standalone collector files onto the user's machine. You give them a batch file or something that starts the IntelliTrace sc.exe with the actual application that you want to run and trace. And you pass it the parameters of where the collection plan file is and where it needs to store the IntelliTrace logs. So that is the other option for the standalone executable. And then when you're done, just delete all the files again, and nothing remains on the system. So for the agent workflow, it's a bit different. There you install the agent, and the conceptual workflow is the same. It's just a slightly different approach. Well, it's the same approach, but slightly different PowerShell command names and parameters, but the idea is the same. You start web application monitoring, you stop and you checkpoint, and that's it. For the executable, the agent itself has a, as part of the installation directory, also has a copy of the standalone collector that you would find in the cap file from the previous slide. So you still have all the options if you have the agent installed. So those are the options to get your data on your production system. So let's take a look at how that works in practice. So I'm using Brian Keller's virtual machine. If you've ever seeing that, it is a TFS sample virtual machine that you can just publicly download, so it's really nice to see. And they have this site in there that has a problem. So you can, this is sort of a support site where you can log tickets, and apparently there's one issue with the site that if I click through, one of these tickets will have a problem that there is some error coming out of the application. And usually the tester will send you this screen and that tells you basically exactly nothing. So you need to have more details of what's going on inside of the process before you can sort of figure out what's going on. So this is the scenario that we're trying to troubleshoot here. So if I go and start, first of all, I want to prepare my machine so that I've made a batch file which basically copies the cap file. I'll show you the cap file where it's located. It is in the Visual Studio Common 7 IDE, Common Extensions, Microsoft IntelliTrace 12 directory. So there's a cap file, and that is basically, it's like a zip file that you extract with extract.exe, which is a built-in Windows executable tool. So my command file here will take that cap file and then expand it into a collector directory. It will also create a log directory, and it will also set permissions on those two directories because, let me run it in the meantime. So it expanded all the files, it created the collector directory and the logs directory, and it granted read access for the IIS application pool to the collector directory because the IntelliTrace PowerShell module will be loaded into that process. So the application pool process needs to be able to access that directory. And it also granted write access to the logs directory because that's where we're writing this IntelliTrace file. So if you have an application pool user that is not a regular machine user or is a domain account or something, then you need to make sure that this user account can write and read from these directories. So that's something that I just put in the batch file. And then I basically start PowerShell, and I import a module that is in that collector directory that I just created. So import module of the PowerShell DLL. So that succeeded. And then we can find out all the commandlets that are available in that PowerShell module. And there's five of them. That is the start, stop, and checkpoint that I talked about. But you can also do some status reporting where you can say get IntelliTrace collection status or IntelliTrace file info on the IntelliTrace file. So these are the built-in commandlets. You can also get some more help. For example, here is the syntax for the start IntelliTrace collection commandlet. So that's interesting to know. But let's just start running. So now I am starting IntelliTrace collection for my fabricandfiber.extranet.web application pool. I am pointing at the collector collection plan ASP.NET.TraceXML. So that is one of the stock built-in collection plans that traces all the events and all the method entry and exit events. So this is the, let's say, the highest performance impacting, but I'm just here on a simple machine, so that's okay. And I'm also pointing at the logs directory where it needs to store that IntelliTrace log. So I'll say yes to enable that. And then the important part to remember here is, which can be sort of a bummer, if you start IntelliTrace, then it will automatically recycle your application pool. It needs to do that because you cannot attach a profiler to a running process. It always needs to start with the process. So if you have this kind of scenario where sometimes you have a problem, but you can't really reproduce it easily, then you will need to be running in monitoring mode, or you will need to be continuously monitoring and then hope that the bug reproduces quickly enough so that you're not overflowing your production system. So that is important to know. Starting IntelliTrace will always recycle the application pool. So now it is running. And if I open my browser again and go to my site, then it takes a bit of time because, as I said, it's been recycled. So now it's starting up. So while that's starting up, I can take a question. Yeah. Yeah, for Windows services, that's the same thing. You need to restart the Windows service. And for Windows service, it doesn't work with a registry hack or anything. You need to enter an environment variable for that user that is running the service or for the system-wide. And then what you can do to minimize the impact, because you might have multiple services starting up. Oh, your question was for a service, Windows service, right? All right, then you can do it in the registry. If it's for a COM+ thing, then you have to do the environment variable and then just briefly put the environment variables, start up the one thing that you want to trace, and remove the environment variables very quickly so that other things that start up aren't impacted. Anyway. But for services, it's a bit interesting. It's a bit simpler. It's just in the registry for that one particular service where you can configure it. So now I am back in production. My site started up, and I'm trying to reproduce. And boom, once I get the reproduction, I can say, well, this is my lucky day. And now I will stop collection, because now usually I should have my information in my IntelliTrace file. So if I go into my logs directory, there will be this iTrace file that I can now extract from my production system and into my Visual Studio environment. So once you are back on your development station, then you can use Visual Studio to open up that file. That's really easy. You just double-click the iTrace file or you open it directly in Visual Studio. And then you get this nice summary view, which basically gives you all the interesting information about the process that was being captured. So immediately you get a list of all the exceptions that occurred during processing. But you also see the web request if you're using that web instrumentation mode. You also see all the modules that were loaded, the system details, if it's a 64-bit process, what version of Windows it was running, and stuff like that, and a list of all the threads. So already at the start, you get some nice information. And then if you want to search through the exception list, you can click on an exception, see the call stack directly there. So that could already be enough to find your problem. If it's not, then you basically select one of the entry points, select an exception, and there's this button that's not on the screen, which I'll show in a minute, that says start debugging. And then you would open your debug session as if it were live. I won't go through the MSDN copy of the images. I'll just show this in real life. So let's assume that I'm now back at my developer workstation where I've copied this iTrace file and I open it in Visual Studio. So I see immediately that there's exceptions that have occurred. And some of them are sort of to be expected. Thread abort exception is something that ASP.NET does regularly throw. Runtime binder exceptions is something that can happen if you're using a system dynamic. But these null reference exceptions, in my case, are something I really don't expect. So if I click one of them, I'll get the call stack that says on the get service ticket method, I'm getting some null reference exception. So that doesn't really sound very good. I can also see the web request, so all the HTTP calls that were coming in. So I clicked a couple of times, and then boom, I see what happened. System information like version of Windows, how much memory there was, stuff like that. All the threads, all the modules, so basic information. But let's assume that I want to debug and see what's going on. Then I just say debug my exception that I selected. And now I am in debug mode in Visual Studio. So again, the process is on another machine. It's already dead. It's passed on. It's gone through some other stage. But Visual Studio lets me pretend that I'm live at the moment where the exception occurred. So here I can directly see that I'm inside of this piece of code. And it did find the right place in the code because hopefully you have PDBs, program debug database files, and they are sort of the companion files to DLLs. DLL is runtime information. The PDB contains information about that DLL and which are the source files that have been used to build that DLL. So the PDBs are really important. If you don't have a PDB, then this stuff won't work. If you want to have PDBs, then it's really easy if you're using TFS, for example, because then you get the additional benefit that not only do you get the PDB, but the PDB will also be source indexed, as they call it, to point to the exact version of the file that was used to build the DLL in source control. So you can never have the wrong version. So it could be that your development machine has a much newer build than the actual build being used in production, but still Visual Studio will pull that source file out of TFS version control to the exact version of the file that was used to build a DLL. So it's important to have PDB, symbol stores, and source server indexing for TFS if you're using TFS or other version control systems have that same thing. Question is it bad to put the PDBs on the production server? I think not. I think that makes it really easy because then you don't have to mess with symbol stores being accessible and up to date. I just basically put PDBs as much as possible on production servers.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess it's kind of a rule you don't do that, but I don't know why. Just accept the issue.
Okay. I don't see a good reason. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. But in case of trouble, it's really, really convenient. So anyway, you start debugging. If you have a symbol store or you have the PDBs right next to it, you immediately get into the right source file, and there you see what happened. In my case, I'm seeing that I'm trying to new up this new view model thing, and I am putting an assigned-to property to the service ticket.assigned-to.full name, but if you look closely at the locals window, that assigned-to thing is null. So I'm accessing a property on a null object which throws the null reference exception. So this is overly simplified in real life. You will probably have a bit more work to do to figure out what the problem is, but maybe not. But even so, you can see in Visual Studio that you do have access to the locals window, you have access to the call stack, and the locals shows you all the information that was captured at runtime. So it shows the information that comes out of the event diagnostic definitions, so the data queries that we'll take a look at, or it shows all the parameters coming in or out of the method. So depending on where you are in time, that will show you more or less information. And then with these gutter bar handles, you can go back or forward in time. So if I go back in time, I'll step back to the previous and then back once more, and then I'm at the point where it captured the incoming parameters. So here I can see that my incoming parameter for my ticket ID was number 3. If only I would be able to use, the Zoomit tool. Cool. So this can be that runtime data that is really important, because for 99% of the tickets, this will work just fine, but it's just that one ticket that failed, right? So you need to know which ticket ID it was in this case. So here you can step through. You can also see in the complete events view that there were some events going on. So you see here, for example, that we came through in get for the get service ticket endpoint. Then there was some execution of a command against the SQL database. Then there were these exceptions coming on. So you can see that there's a number of events being surfaced right inside Visual Studio where you can also search and filter by categories and stuff like that. I don't want to go too far into the details of Visual Studio because basically this is the most important part and the rest is something you can see on a YouTube video. Yes, question. Yeah. The file for these, let's say, a minute of recording is 30 megabytes. And most of that is allocated at the beginning. There was 50 megabytes that you get like from start off. Yeah. But the size of the file really heavily depends on all the things that you're doing, how long you are tracing, how many users are accessing. So that is something it's really hard to predict. Yes, but if I execute with 6 pages, this won't be 60 megabytes, right? So this is not representative of, 3 pages is 30 megabytes, so 30 pages is 300 megabytes. No, right. It does mean something, yeah. So that's why the checkpointing can be interesting to say, okay, so far nothing happened, checkpoint, delete all the stuff from before, and keep monitoring. Yeah. Gigabytes for one page request. What is going on in your application? Okay, yeah. Fair enough. So yeah, the amount of data that you capture depends on the collection plan, on the data queries that you're putting in there. So the idea is to only include the information that you need and don't let it just suck up everything from memory and put it in the iTrace file. So that's why really it's up to you to define the exact things that it needs to capture to keep this not only file size low but also the impact on the production system. Just to make some marketing people happy, I guess. In Visual Studio 2013, Update 2, which is coming along pretty soon, there's a release candidate available. There are some improvements coming in that debugging scenario in Visual Studio. For example, you will get a much easier way to troubleshoot SQL failures. So if you have a SQL command that is running, it does capture the SQL command, but you still have to extract it and then go over to, for example, a profiler, or execute the query, look at the results. But in the update 2, you can just click the query. It will generate your SQL query file with all the parameters substituted directly. You can execute the query against the database and see the collection plan, the query plan, the execution plan, and all that kind of stuff directly in Visual Studio. So that's pretty nice. Another thing is they make it easier to understand MVC, ASP.NET MVC applications, because you do see the requests coming in. So that's in Visual Studio. You saw that there was a GET request, but you don't immediately know if you're using MVC what controller or what action was being accessed. So in here they will populate that automatically and you'll see directly, it's on this controller, that action. And then finally, also for exception debugging, which I think is more useful, when you start debugging, as I did before, I would get this code file only, but with update 2 you would also get this code map is what it's called. Which shows you how you got to the point where there was the exception. So it shows you the methods that it traversed through to get here, and you can click them, you can go in, you can see some more information right on that directed graph. So that makes it easier to understand how you got to this point. So you don't have to manually go back in time to find the call stack. So that can be quite interesting as well to get a better understanding of what's going on. Right, so the demo I did. And so now we're getting into the heart and soul of IntelliTrace, and that is the extensibility. So this is where you can really make sure that you're capturing exactly the data that you need to have to troubleshoot your problem. So that means customizing the collection plan. So you can add your own categories. You can add your own events, as I said. These are either defined in the XML or with a programmable data query, which is a .NET class that you can write yourself. This is the one I showed you before. So this is a custom diagnostic event. Well, it's custom in the sense that this one has been built by the .NET Framework team, but you can define your own events. I've added one. I've added a couple in my demo. So this will define what at some trigger, the trigger always being some method being called, so in this case the execute reader method, then you can define which data it needs to capture, and that is part of the data queries. So you really have full control over the field access that you want to traverse in here and the data that you want to capture. So the data queries element is the important part there, and it's a bit tricky, so it took me a while to figure out what everything meant, because it's not really self-explanatory and there's no documentation on that kind of stuff. So if you want to write a data query, you need to be aware that there's a couple of attributes on the element. And the easiest one is to understand is the name, because that's the thing that will show up in the locals window in Visual Studio. So that's an identifier name that you want to give it. But then you go into the index and the query. So these are the things that define the data that you want to capture. The index being the index into the parameter list. So that is, you are always triggering on some kind of method call, and a method will have parameters. And the index defines which parameter you want to capture. Now, do take into account that for a static, method, the zeroth parameter will be the first in the list. For an instance method, the zeroth, so the initial parameter, will always be the this parameter. So you don't only get access to the actual method parameters, but also to the object that is being called on. So that's the 01 is pretty interesting. But you have to take that into account if it's a static or it's a non-static method, right? So you have to be careful what zero means. If you are on the return value, meaning that you have specified in your binding that you are only tracing the return value of a method, then you need to use minus one as the index. So the index defines the object on which you want to extract some data, and then the query is the path in field notation with a dot between fields where you can navigate from that object onto the exact runtime data that you want to extract. That thing needs to be, whatever you're extracting, it needs to be a basic data type, because IntelliTrace stores basic stuff in the iTrace file. So it needs to be a bool, char, byte, and so forth. So that's something that you need to specify in a type field. If you are extracting a string, they do request or make it mandatory to pass in a maximum size, so you sort of constrain the string size that comes out of that memory location. For example, by default for SQL commands or ODBC commands, they will only extract the first 4 kilobytes of the command text. And obviously when you have that production problem, then you will see that the thing that you're interested in is beyond those 4K, so you can go in, make that size a little bit bigger and start over. So that's where you play with that maximum size for that string variable. So that's a data query. So the index, don't mistake it for something that you see in the short description, for example. So short description and long description make it possible to just give the thing a nice description in Visual Studio. And they use that curly brace 0, 1, 2, 3 syntax that you are familiar with a string format expression. That is not the index here that should refer to an index in a data query. The 0 or 1 is the index of the data query itself. So the execute reader 0 here would be populated with the first data query's value, being the command text. Just so you know, that's quite confusing. Okay, so those are event definitions in your XML file with all the bindings that you want to put onto it. So you define a method that needs to be intercepted, and you define the fields that are getting extracted. If that is not enough for you, and you really want to get full access to the runtime memory, then you can plug in your own DLL. So you can build a custom programmable data query, which is a DLL that you write, and then you reference that from within your XML file. So instead of doing that previous longer thing where you specify the method and, you do need to specify the method, but you don't specify the data queries here, but you just specify your DLL. So there you implement this iProgrammable data query thing, and then you are being injected into the process in your production system at runtime. So I think it goes without saying, you need to be a bit careful of what you're doing there. Be very, very efficient. Do only the minimum amount of work. Don't start formatting anything. Just capture the raw data directly into the iTrace file and let formatting happen on the other side. You will see that reflected, well, not explicitly, but you will see that in the demo that is coming up. Let's take a look at some of these events. I've defined a couple of custom events, and I'm using them from a sample application to make it easier to understand. I have this really stupid console application that you can ask to throw exceptions and change the system culture and stuff like that. It's really moronic, I guess. But it does show that you can trace interesting points in your code. So for example, let's say that this throw helper was part of a .NET or a custom framework that I have, which throws if some flag is set to true. So if some condition is met, then I need to throw some exception with a message. So I have this throw helper, and I'm running into issues in production, and this throw helper is somehow involved, but I don't know how it got to the point where this throw helper is involved or invoked. So you can ask it to throw and handle it, or you can ask it to throw and not handle it, or you can ask it to change the culture. So that's the console application. As I said, it's quite silly, but it does show that there are a couple of points where you probably want to intercept your data. Let's first run over the diagnostic events. So there are a couple of things that I have added. So one is, I am adding that into a custom category. You need to specify the category to which this event belongs, so you can sort of group it and filter on it in Visual Studio. I just created a custom category. I give the thing a name and a description that could potentially show up in Visual Studio as well. And then the interesting part is where I have these bindings. So the bindings are those things that I showed before, where you basically say, for the DLL specified in this sample console app module ID, which is defined a bit higher, that basically points at the DLL that I'm tracing, I want to inspect whenever something happens to this type. So it's a class that is called sampleApp.throwHelper. So that's the thing that you have right below here. That's my throw helper. So this is the class that I want to inspect. And I want to inspect whenever this throw if needed method is being called. And to be more specific, because you could have multiple overloads, you need to specify the full signature as well. So I want to trace the one that takes two parameters, a Boolean and a string, and it returns a Boolean. So in that case, when that happens, I want to trace a message into the IntelliTrace file, and I have some data queries here, and these two basically define that I want to have index 0. Let's check if this is an instance method or static. No, it's a static. And I'm tracing this one, the one with the two parameters. So I have the needed and the message. It is static, so the argument 0, the index 0 here, will refer to the first parameter, so the Boolean. So that's the one that I'm extracting as a Boolean with the same name to make it less confusing. There's no query because I'm already directly on that Boolean value. I don't need to drill down in any fields of a Boolean because that doesn't make sense. And then the first index is the other parameter, which is the string with the message, and I'm only taking the first 256 characters out of that one. So that's simple enough. Second binding is similar, but now for the second overload, which has a throw helper, or a throw information, sorry, helper class, which contains those two parameters. It's contrived, I know, but it's to illustrate a point. So that is the method below. So here I do need to go and drill down into my object because I'm not directly at the system Boolean or the system string data types. So here I'm going to take the zero index, which is the parameter, and then I'm going to go into the query, which is the needed field of my throw information class. I've done something horrible here and I've not used properties. But I've used public fields directly because otherwise I would have to specify the the compiler generated ugly field names for the auto properties. Anyway, so this is just to make it simpler to demonstrate. So I'm tracking my message and my query fields from my class here. Then another option is to say, well, that's fine when coming in, but I also want to trace the return value of that method. So it does return a Boolean value in both cases. So I'm now specifying on the binding that I want to check the return value. And in that case, you need to use that -1 index to get the return value, which again is a Boolean. And then finally, I also have injected a custom programmable data query. So that's my DLL. And that also occurs whenever somebody calls that throw if needed method with the helper class that surrounds the two parameters, so the Boolean and the message. So this is all set up in the XML file. And finally, that's something that I added after the fact. I also have one that listens for a culture change, because that's something that I encountered at a customer and I thought was interesting. They basically had this application that was running, and they moved it from a Windows Server 2003 IS6, and they moved it onto an IS7, IS8, by the way, sorry. And it behaved differently. And basically, they were seeing that there were some culture differences and the formatting was off, and it was really kind of weird. So they were wondering who is actually changing the culture in my application domain, and they couldn't figure it out. So what we did, we would just enable IntelliTrace, put a binding on here that says, whenever the current culture on the thread is changed, I want to know about it. So we said the method is systemthreading.thread.setCurrentCulture, because a property is really just a method, with a culture info that returns a void. So take care, if you have a void returning method, you do need to specify this in the binding. If you make any mistake in the XML file, IntelliTrace will just silently ignore. So that's really, it's kind of hard. You have to make sure that you find the right thing to put in there, because otherwise you're basically just trying to figure it out. Yeah.
What if you're trying to figure out something that goes wrong with a method that has a lot of overloads?
Then you have to specify bindings for all the overloads. If you have multiple overloads, yeah. But hopefully, ultimately, all the overloads will resolve into one mostly used overload that all the others call into, so then you can just trace that one. But that's not always the case, so yeah. Then you would specify all those. And the other thing is, which I found really interesting but haven't gotten around to yet, is that you could have this generated. It's ridiculously easy. It just takes a bit of time, but it's easy enough to just open a DLL and have it generate all these bindings. So you can just select the methods you want to do and then have it generate this bunch of XML, and then you won't make any mistakes. So it's simple enough to automate if you're really worried about the kind of stuff of getting it right. So in here, I am capturing the name of the culture, which is an m_name field on that culture information class. And also the culture ID, which is an integer that specifies a culture. So that helps me track the problem that somebody is changing my culture, but I don't know who or when. So that's something else we did there. So my batch file here will basically copy my programmable data query DLL to my collector directory. You can also put it in the global assembly cache. So the programmable data query is that DLL that you implement with your custom logic that gets injected at runtime. So either you put it in the GAC or you put it side by side with the collector. You also have to do it on your development machine, because that collector is also called at development time or at debugging time when the Visual Studio engine is trying to extract information from the iTrace file. So you need to have it at two places, which is why I have a copy here, one file copied that is into the collector directory, and the other is copied into Visual Studio directory. And then after that, I start the standalone collector, IntelliTrace.se, and I run with a current collection plan, that's the one I just showed you, and it will trace onto this logs directory again. So now I am in my console application, and then I can say N to not throw an exception, H to throw and catch a handled exception. I can say C to change the culture, and I can say U to throw an exception that is not handled and that will crash the process. So there you go. So at that point in time, the process is gone, so the logger stops, obviously. And now I can go into my logs directory again and then take my console. I've had this before. I can take, what was the problem there? I don't remember what the problem was, but I do remember that it didn't occur on my main machine, so I was in a virtual machine, so I'll just jump out. Oh, I need to prepare first. Right, extract the files. And then run the sample again. So I'll do that again. NH, set the culture, and then an unhandled exception. And then in my logs, I now have a file that is 5 megabytes large, and I can open that in my Visual Studio here. So here you see that two exceptions have occurred, one that was handled and one that was unhandled. I'll just debug the newest one in the group. Then it opens on the point where the exception occurred, which is here. And then again, you see that some information is being captured. But if you look at the IntelliTrace window, you can see that a lot of my custom events have now been traced. So I have this custom from the PDQ, the programmable data query. Wow. I have a custom demo one, which is coming from the data query in the XML. Here I can see that on my custom category, I had a culture change to French. So the culture name is here, the culture ID is here. So all the information I extracted from that field is here. So you can, again, jump back and forth in time. You can see all the messages that occurred, all the data that is being captured right from there. So before ending on that, I do want to show you quickly what that programmable data query looks like. Because it is just one interface, but it's a bit of a special signature sometimes. So this is the data query that gets injected at runtime. So this is my DLL. I implement this iProgrammable data query, which is an interface that is provided by IntelliTrace. And then there are a couple of methods. That are part of the interface. So there's an entry query, an exit query, and these get called at runtime. So these are the things that the IntelliTrace collector will call. And so these two need to be extremely efficient. The other ones, not so much. The other three will get called at debugging time inside of Visual Studio. So if you want to do your your CPU intensive processing or formatting or whatever you want to do to figure out what's really going on, please do so in the format description or format collected values methods, but don't do anything expensive in the entry or exit query. So the entry query is when a method is called, and there you get access to the current object that is being called. It will be null for static, and you get access to the object array that represents the parameters. So in my case, I know that I'm tracing my throw information class, which has two fields, a message field and a needed field. So I can extract these at runtime and extract the data out of those. And then basically what I return is a new object array with all the interesting information that I want to capture. But obviously this is a simple case. Here you can do everything. You're in the process, in the memory space, in the application domain. You can really do anything that you want. Just again, make it efficient. If you want to trace the return value, then you use the exit query. I'm not using that here, so I'm just returning null. But you could do your custom logic there. And then on the other side of the spectrum, once you're back in your Visual Studio environment, Visual Studio will call this interface again. And then it will, first of all, it can ask for three things. That is a short description that is shown in the IntelliTrace side panel there. The short description where you can return anything that is properly formatted. It also has the long description, which is when you click the event and then it opens another panel with more details. So that's this one. But then the probably more interesting one is this format collected values method. And that really gives you the opportunity to take the raw data that was traced, format it into some readable format or parse it or go through some additional processing, and then put that in a list of collected value tuples, which is just basically sort of a dictionary that is shown in the locals window. So that is your place to process the data and put it into some human readable format. And then finally, this one, get alternate locations. I have no clue what it's used for. They say it's for internal use only, returnal, so that's what I'm doing. So that is why in my Visual Studio runtime, you will see in my PDQ, you will see these nice values getting extracted from my custom PDQ demo here. I have a short description, I have a long description that is formatted, and in my locals window, I will have those things coming from that tuple, the list of tuples, those are put in the locals window. Right, so just in time to wrap up. For me, the conclusion is pretty simple. This is a tool that is not widely used, and I cannot for the life of me figure out why not. It's very powerful. It does allow you to tweak the hell out of the collection plan. So if you want to get the information you need and you know sort of where to look, but not exactly, start with a basic collection plan, increase the dial, start figuring out where you need to go next, and keep tracing that stuff until you find your root problem, and hopefully that will make your testers and end users happy because you're no longer closing bugs as no repro. So with that, hopefully you'll get a chance to play with that as well. Please do fill in the evaluations, blah, blah. And have a safe trip home. I hope you enjoy the session, and hope you'll play with IntelliTrace sometime. Cheers.